We're from Jersey, baby. And you're not.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
I saw the burrito go in the freezer. That's the only place I want to see the burrito.
Ross Dellinger.
Close that door. Come on, boys.
And SI's Pat Forty.
How about we fire everyone on tobacco, bro? I mean, good God.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, our cold open there on the audio is Phil Murphy, governor of New Jersey, taunting all of us who do not live in Jersey. And we do this on behalf of not just Rutgers, who's 3-0, but the Monmouth Hawks. They walked into Mr. Worldwide Pitbull Stadium at FIU and left 45-22 victory, first ever against an FBS school. I bring this up because it is part of a weekend, which I think for a lot of us started on Friday, where we had this wild overtime duel where Illinois beats Nebraska. And then an even wilder double overtime duel where Washington State beat San Jose. And we get to a Saturday where there aren't really that many marquee games, but like Michigan wins by throwing 32 passing yards. Shedeur Sanders kind of completes two consecutive Hail Marys to beat Baylor. Yeah. Ole Miss's old quarterback is trashing Ole Miss's old coach, who's now the coach at Auburn, for trashing Auburn's new quarterbacks. Says he wasn't drunk either, anybody involved. BYU scores a touchdown. They score 31 points in 7 minutes of game action somehow, including on this ridiculous muffed punt where the kid traverses like 200 yards of Utah turf to finally get in the end zone, where he almost fumbles it, which leads to me corresponding with a parody account of Bill Snyder, the old Kansas State coach, about whether or not he was going to really fulfill a bet where he was going to stuff a frozen, beefy, five-layer burrito into his... There was many other twists and turns. And this is what I got to say. None of the teams I just mentioned are going to win the national championship.
No.
of this had anything to do with the national championship. This was college football at its absolute stupid best. Even at BYU, they were drunk. And people said the playoffs going to ruin college football's regular season. No, you can't ruin it.
No, you can't.
The only thing that can ruin it is conference realignment. We need all these teams. This is the sport. The sport is crazy. It's ridiculous. It's fun. These people, Colorado Storm in the field. You're only going to win like five. Who cares? They had a great time. It was an incredible football game.
They had a Hail Mary. I mean, come on. You're going to begrudge them storming the field?
People begrudge.
Oh, boy, do they.
A lot of begrudging.
Especially where Colorado's involved. We'll get to that.
This sport is awesome. Last night was both Friday and Saturday night, incredibly entertaining. It is reality TV at its finest. And it's all because not if you just spend all your time focusing on who's going to win the national championship, you're missing the whole movie. Don't worry about who's going to die in the end, man. Enjoy the journey. This was crazy.
And no matter what happens off the field, still delivers on the field. No matter all the crazy circus going on in college athletics, off the field, realignment, NIL, all the court cases, on the field, it still remains an incredible, incredible product.
Yeah. Wild, wild west. It's a disaster. No. Mm. Fantastic. Let's start in Colorado. Okay. I'll be a brief recap and hand it over. Baylor's up 31-24. Dave Aranda needs this win for its job, probably. Colorado gets the ball. They go three and out. They don't just go three and out. They lose 21 yards on the three and out. They look like they've never practiced football. Baylor gets the ball on a punt at the 26-yard line of Colorado. Like, it's over. They manage to somehow lose 2 yards and then blow the field goal. Colorado gets the ball back. Shedeur Sanders starts making plays. Travis Hunter almost had this big catch. They kind of got screwed by the refs a little bit. Shedeur Sanders throws a basic Hail Mary where somehow Will Shepard gets behind the Baylor defense and then drops the ball as it hits him between the numbers at like the 3 yard line. And I don't normally like bringing up, shouldn't have mentioned the kid's name. I don't like bringing up plays where a player plays bad, but whatever. All's well that ends well. And you're like, oh my God, they almost did the Cordell Stewart again. Is that they dropped it. And then the next play, Shedeur Sanders makes an even more incredible throw and hits LeJonte Wester with this sliding catch. He threw him open. I don't even know how you can do this. They tie the game, 31-31. Colorado gets the ball, scores in overtime. Baylor's going in for the touchdown. Travis Hunter, who already had 7 receptions on one side of the ball and is playing like his 1,497th snap of the game, delivers this tackle on a guy that outweighs him, fumbles the ball out of the end zone. Colorado looks like they win. Half the stadium storms the field. They do the video replay. The other half storms the field. Pat, what the hell happened in Boulder?
Oh, a lot happened in Boulder. So much happened in Boulder, and this is why Deion's team, I mean, you cannot not look. So many people want to say how bad Colorado is, how bad a coach prime is, how bad a roster manager, and everybody watches. Whether you're rooting for him, whether you're rooting against him, and then, oh my God, all kinds of hell's going to break loose when they play. More often than not, they play close game after close game after close game, and they have totally riveting players in some key positions. I mean, Shedeur Sanders, he makes mistakes. He takes sacks. You know, he probably does some things that will not fare well at the NFL level, but he also does a lot that's really, really good and would fare well at the NFL level. He has a phenomenal arm. He has great vision. He has daring. He is tough as hell. And the two throws he made there were phenomenal. And we can get to Baylor and Dave Aranda and somehow having a defense where you're single covering guys 50 yards down the field when you should be dropping 7 people into the end zone.
Rush 5, baby. But, rush 5.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I mean, the second throw, yes, he rolls to his left the hard way to roll for a right-hander. Sets himself just enough, knows that he's going to get nailed for the 200th time that night as the pass rush closes in, and fires that thing down there. And yes, LeJonte Wester gets down to the ground and cradles the thing without letting it hit the ground. And suddenly we got Hail Mary and Boulder. Hail Prime, Hail everything, and then Hail Hunter at the other end of the field with Travis Hunter, who is, we've said it last week or whenever we did, that he should be the Heisman front runner by far without really any argument at this point. But, oh boy, people like to argue about it. Oh, they do. They really, really do. I had a guy yesterday. Well, Jeremiah Smith's a better receiver than he is. Okay. What are his how's his defensive back work? where Travis Hunter's a first-round pick as a DB. And as Dan said, to quote you last week, he's about the business. He hits people. He had to hit cause the fumble. And his other tackle on the night, he looked like Troy Polamalu. He came flying up and obliterated a dude running an under out, turned it into a tackle for loss when the catch was about the line of scrimmage. I mean, he hit him hard and put him down. He tackles, he covers, he catches, and he never leaves the field. Colorado, can't wait to watch him every week. Now they're going to, oh, you know what? They're going to get crushed at Central Florida next week, just like they did against Oregon last year. It's the same setup. Going to be a bad, bad setup there, and they're going to lose, I would predict. If they don't, I'll be shocked.
Yeah, I think Travis Hunter is finally, people are coming around to convincing themselves that he at least is in the conversation for the Heisman Trophy. Some people don't even have him mentioned, which is insane. And I think finally that game, you could see just nationally kind of convince some people that, oh, he's definitely in the conversation if he's not the front runner. It's amazing. And then, you know, his stats as a receiver, you know, probably could have one more on there, a 40-yarder late in the game where his hand-eye coordination is truly remarkable. His instincts are truly remarkable. The play where that, you know, that hit the ground, it was reviewed, the long pass to him in the fourth quarter, you know, it ricochets off of somebody's body. And while Hunter is falling down, he somehow corrals it and it barely hits the ground, just barely hits the ground enough for them to overturn it. But it's just incredible. And then on the last play, you know, you see the ball popped out and I'm watching it live, you know, and it's just like, oh my gosh, wow, what a hit. I wonder who made the hit. Bop, big surprise. It's Hunter. It's number 12. It's been incredible to watch. And like Pat said, you know, Colorado might not win every game. It might not look pretty at times, but boy, they are incredibly entertaining. Kind of encapsulates all of college athletics. Oftentimes a circus, but oftentimes incredibly entertaining.
Yeah, that last play, we won't go too much. We've done this, but like Travis Hunter is 185 pounds. He is a lone against a 216-pound running back with momentum coming at him. And he's probably going to score. The only thing that's going to stop a touchdown is causing the fumble. And he goes in on it. Like, if you want to make a business decision, touchdown. It's not like the game's over, right? He makes that play. Are there better receivers? Is Jeremiah Smith a better receiver? Yeah, probably. Is Will Johnson of Michigan a better cornerback? Yeah, perhaps. He plays both.
He does.
At an elite level, top 10.
Will Johnson isn't in the comparison as the best receiver. Like, it's like, okay.
Right. No.
I don't know.
No.
Cam Ward's going to throw a million yards, but.
Yeah. People will go out of their way to find reasons to disqualify him. There was some guy, this was, people are very creative, I will say. Some guy said, what was it? The phrase game changer has become closely associated with the Heisman Trophy, and he's not going to change enough games if they go 5-7. It's like, where's that in the rules where it says game changer is a criteria for picking who wins the Heisman? First of all, we don't know whether they're going to go 5-7. They're 3-1. Secondly, Paul Hornung, 2-8. So, yeah, this 4-8 person can't win the Heisman. Well, somebody wanted it 2-8.
Well, the game changer is kind of like I recall the game control aspect that the CFP got bashed for using game control years ago.
Quickly, Ross, think Dave Aranda survives?
That was a tough one, boy. You know, last year, I think Baylor AD Mac Rhodes had a pretty tough decision. I think that they went back and forth on whether to keep Dave Aranda as coach. In the end, they decided to do it. They decided to, I think, and Dave Aranda's been quite public about this, decided to devote more resources NIL-wise. For Aranda, and got to have results. And certainly that one was really, really tough for them. You know, in the Big 12, you look at their schedule, right? I mean, there's winnable games. The Big 12 is shaping up just like we all expected, right? Anybody can win any game. It's crazy. It's fun. So they could turn it around here, but that was a blow. And you could tell on Aranda's face afterward, and during the game, you know, you could tell how important the game was to him because he's a pretty mild-mannered guy, right? And there was a couple clips of him where he was, like, screaming his head off. I have never seen him like that, ever.
Never.
So he knew how big that one was, and that hurts.
Yeah, it you know, unfortunately, when one team performs a miracle, it probably means the other team helped, and Baylor definitely helped at the end of the game. As Dan said, they missed that field goal and they didn't take advantage of some other opportunities. And then the defense
last drive, two penalties, and then you just somehow give up two clean strikes for a 50-yard bomb. So, we'll see how things play out. Mac Rhodes is not a knee-jerk, hair-trigger kind of guy, but Baylor needs to win and win quickly.
Yeah, Baylor needs wins. Mac Rhodes is a smart dude as their AD. He rushed five on that last play on the last play of regulation. And the goal was to force Shador to throw across his body in that roll left, throw right. And it worked. And I don't know that there's another guy in college football that could have possibly made that play. And the way he threw the receiver open was, it's just incredible. It's one of the best Hail Marys I've ever seen, as Aaron Rodgers-esque, because it wasn't just chuck it down there and hope it bounces off some guy's head into another dude's arms.
No.
It was like, my guy's covered, but I'm going to throw him open 43 yards from the line of scrimmage, probably 50-something yards back while running the wrong way cross-body. At some point, I think Aran is like, we did exactly what we wanted. We made this guy make the one in a million throw, and he freaking made it. And made the receiver make a one in a million break and catch, and it worked. And it's just, man, that is football.
Well, that's what I was about to say. The receiver, Ashante Wester, made an incredible play to get off of what was pretty good hand-to-hand combat there on the goal line and just kind of spin away from the DB and find the ball and corral it where it didn't hit the ground. Just remarkable play.
It's amazing career spin on stuff like that. Excellent job by Deion Sanders recruiting Shador Sanders. That was good. Really, some recruiting victory if there ever was one.
One home visit he did make.
Someone had something.
I mean, think about.
Go ahead.
No, think about Colorado. Colorado has. They have arguably, I think, a top 10 quarterback in college football.
For sure.
They have a top 5 cornerback in college football. And they have a top 5 receiver in college football who also is a cornerback. It's wild. It's also scary to think about what happens when they lose those two players.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, that's why you charge the field. Like, enjoy the night.
Yeah, right.
Are you going to win 4 or 5 games this year? Maybe. Are you going to win? Is it trouble next year? Oh, yeah. Is this going to work? Probably
they
not.
They still struggle blocking.
Yeah.
They still struggle blocking. Right. 8 sacks, eight I think. Shador sacked 8 times. Lines. 8 sacks.
Do we really know what we're doing? No. Like, is this... But we won. It's Saturday night. We won the game. Yeah. Let's go.
Yeah.
Stop with the overanalysis. Like, it was fun.
Right. Yes, it was a lot of fun. Their defense is better than I thought it was going to be. First half against North Dakota State, I was like, oh, my God, they're going to give up 40 every game. But they've been pretty solid defensively.
All right. Let's go to this Michigan-USC game. Michigan wins. I have no idea how. I don't know that anyone knows how. Alex Orji, 12 completions, 32. Is that
7 for 12?
7 for 12.
7.
32 yards. 10 yards is his longest throw. He had 43 rushing. They go the entire second half without a first down until 2:23 left when Khalil Mullings busts his second long run. It's just incredible. 63-yard breaking multiple tackles and then running away from the Trojans to completely flip the game. Mullings is a Michigan class. This is a Harbaugh classic. A converted linebacker from Massachusetts is now their like running threat. Grinding meat, Mullings called it. That's how Michigan is grinding. I've heard of all. Chop the wood. I've heard cement. The butchers of America are now behind the Wolverines. We're grinding meat in Ann Arbor. Zigerman's Deli. They get an incredible pick six by Will Johnson, who's just, oh my Lord. But then he goes out injured, but he's not injured. He's going to be okay. They win without Colston Loveland. They can't do anything. USC should have won the football game. They didn't. Again, if I'm Michigan, I am celebrating all night long and then going, we'll deal with the rest later. This isn't going to work in Columbus. So what? Yeah, what a game. Right. Pat?
Truly, that was like, I when they got the ball back for that last possession, you're like, no, there's just no way. They cannot get down the field because they can't throw. But they did the one thing that they proved capable of doing in the game, which is to break long runs. They had three of them, one in the first quarter, one in the second quarter, and then the massive run by Mullings when they absolutely had to have something. I mean, I was astounded. So they ran 58 plays for 322 yards, and let's see, what, like a, like 150? About half of that came up. Well, about half came on three runs. The rest of it was just, you know, flailing around left and right, getting nothing done. Alex Orji, you're watching. It's one of those things where you feel bad for the quarterback. He is the quarterback. It's like DJ Uiagalelei at Florida State. He is the quarterback. He's who they got. But he can't do the thing you expect quarterbacks to do, which is throw the ball. But he did one thing that Davis Warren failed to do, which he stopped throwing interceptions. He didn't throw any picks after Davis Warren threw six of them in the first three games. So he didn't commit the back-breaking mistake. In fact, Miller Moss did, throwing the pick six to Will Johnson, although there was a hell of a play by Will Johnson, again, with the ridiculous jump on the ball. But the how they found a way to win that game, I am not sure. But that was a very nice win for a team that probably is going to tap out against the likes of Oregon and Ohio State.
Did we get any reaction from Jim Harbaugh? He had to love the fact that they threw for like 30 yards passing and still won a game in one that way where it was just all out. Although they gave up some points, obviously, in the second half, but an all out defensive gym there. That's the defense that I think we all thought we would see, like, you know, in the Texas game, and just didn't see it as much. Maybe that has to do with Texas. You know, a lot of folks were certainly expecting a lot. I think we all, you know, thought USC would win the game. You know, we saw the USC against LSU, and it's just not the one we got offensively in this game. They just at times just completely stalled and couldn't find answers to move the ball. And obviously defensively, although, you know, made a lot about Deonton Lynn and you know, overhauling the defense there. They kind of just got run over. They just couldn't get enough stops. And now, you know, another long, I'm sure a long cross-country flight back that was pretty crappy for the Trojans. And now it's trying to find answers for how to get this thing going.
Yeah, tough loss.
Yeah, once again, you know, one team's great play is another team's terrible play. And Khalil Mullings was hard to tackle, but USC failed to tackle. They had three guys that had shots at him and didn't bring him down. And that looked like the Alex Grinch defense at a time when they really needed somebody to get him on the ground.
Yeah. Deonton Lynn thought the second half adjustments were perfect. I mean, literally perfect. Yeah. They're going to three and out the whole damn game. Eric Gentry, Mason Cobb, Braylon Shelby, these guys played. I thought USC's defense was terrific. Woody Marks, incredible running back.
Oh my gosh.
Great hard runs. And then he's the one that stole that ball back, that fumble. Yeah. Like, I was like, this is USC is showing up and showing they can be physical in this league. And then right when they needed to be physical at the end, one more tackle, they didn't do it. Bitter loss. I think it was a promising game for USC, but that doubt lingers, and that's a tough loss.
Lincoln Riley was critical of himself for the series before Michigan's last series, when they could have maybe put the game away. They got nothing done, and he said he didn't call a very good series. You know, that's one of those that'll nag at you for a while.
Yeah. All right. Quickly on the biggest ranked game of the day, Tennessee 25-15 over Oklahoma out in Norman. Great homecoming from Josh Heupel, the former Oklahoma quarterback, great, and then offensive coordinator there. Really good game by Tennessee. I just love their balance. They got a good run game. They got a tough defense. They have Nico making some plays, but he doesn't have to do too many. It's just a really good football team. And we're going to talk a lot about Tennessee the rest of the season, I think. I'm still bullish on my host a playoff game prediction. But I'm going to keep reminding my one good prediction preseason. Oklahoma. Yikes. Quarterback play improved when Michael Hawkins got in, but they contributed their own defeat. Two fumbles, a pick, a safety, just 222 yards. Some tough sledding ahead. Maybe not this week at Auburn. I think they go to Auburn or Auburn comes to them. I don't know. Doesn't really matter.
They go to Auburn. Yeah. Yeah. That's,
we'll get to
that's
Auburn in a second.
Game. Yeah.
But, Pat, thoughts on Sooners or Tennessee? Okay.
Tennessee's nasty. They're tough. I mean, I was watching four games at once, and every time it seemed like I looked over at Tennessee, Oklahoma, some Oklahoma player was limping off, bent over, double, injured because they had been pummeled into the ground. Tennessee hit hard. That was not just a all gas, no brakes, hypal offense sort of thing. As you mentioned, Dan, this is a complete team. They play very well defensively. They're physical in the running game. They're a load. And some great video from Heupel after the game in the locker room. Pretty emotional, thanking his players. He said that, you know, the trip back to Oklahoma wasn't about him, but it means something. And he thanked the players for making it successful. And if you know Heupel, I mean, he is very averse to a whole lot of emotion, but you got a little bit out of him there. And then, yeah, Oklahoma, their only solace is that Lincoln Riley lost too, because they have been trying to get over Lincoln jilting them, and this was one of the, you know, we're fine. We're going to be okay. This was not a signal that they're going to be a robust contender right away in the SEC. They were beaten pretty darn badly and physically manhandled, and they've got major quarterback issues.
You know, we talk a lot about Nico, the Tennessee quarterback, sophomore, has played really well, threw some incredible balls on the road there. But, I mean, Tennessee's defense is, as Pat said, just downright nasty. Everybody got a chance to see it. I mean, I think Oklahoma went maybe 9 or 10 plays straight without gaining, you know, a single yard at some point in that game. When I watch the Tennessee team, you know, I'm reminded of the Tennessee teams in the 90s with Philip Fulmer and how nasty defensively they were and how productive offensively and physical they are. Just overall, this team is built to do some serious damage. Oklahoma certainly searching for answers at quarterback, struggle moving the ball, but I think we have to keep in mind, it's just like Texas playing at Michigan and Michigan's offense. It's the same here. I mean, I think Tennessee is going to be in the elite company there, top five type. So we have to keep that in mind as we talk about Oklahoma's offense, but they've been inconsistent even in other games, I know, this year. And that game on the Plains is going to be quite interesting between those two sort of reeling programs.
All right. Right after this, we'll get to the drama at Auburn. Good times. Let's get negative. Arkansas defeats Auburn at Auburn 24-14. Auburn's now 2-2. Haven't done much impressively. After the game, Coach Hugh Freeze had, again, he kind of did this earlier in the year too. Here's his quotes. I know that there's people open, and I know that we're running the football. We've got to find a guy that won't throw it to the other team. We've got to find running backs that hold on to it. The scheme is what most everybody in the country is running, some sort of, but you've got to have a good quarterback in whatever system you're going to choose. I think there's a couple schools that could say, no, we don't. but whatever. So he tosses his players under the bus again. He did admit they weren't doing a good job coaching quarterbacks. So a little bit of a balance there for Coach Freeze. Old Bo Wallace is currently a coach in JUCO football over at Holmes Community College in Mississippi. And he was there the year before I mentioned pregame on Last Chance U. He's an East Mississippi. Anyway, Bo Wallace had a big career at Ole Miss when the legend of Hugh Freeze was really born. 2012 to 2014, Bo got on social media, says he was not drunk. Didn't appear to be. Later did like a couple of interviews. He absolutely trashes Hugh Freeze. And this is his old coach, who he credits, says, I never would have been as good without Hugh Freeze. But, quote, we're approaching the point that he's thrown so many QBs under the bus that maybe no one wants to play for him. Wallace posted on social media. His offense helped me tremendously put up numbers when I blew my shoulder out. But why is it someone else's fault every time there's a loss? But when there's a win, I watch the press conferences just to count how many times the word I is used. Appreciate what he did for me, but my son wouldn't be playing for him. That dude has never helped me a day in his life. I was always only about getting a win for him so he could collect this extra 100 racks a win. If you knew all the medications and shots I was taking to get that man his money, you wouldn't believe they would let you walk on the field like that. He talked about being like feeling drunk on the field, taking halftime shots. There's a lot. Bo Wallace just trashing his old coach. So I think it's interesting. Bo Wallace standing up for the current Auburn players who most certainly cannot say anything. Pat, I know you always have a few opinions on Coach Freeze.
I mean, there was almost like uncomfortable candor to a degree from Bo Wallace. Like, you know, it's like, I'm just going to bare my soul about how much I went through and look at this jackass over here who's always taking credit for everything. Yikes. That was fascinating. And look, we've seen Hugh Freeze's deal, right? We know his deal. He is about winning games and selling his program, and I'm not sure there's a whole lot else there in terms of what you're going to want to hang your hat on for leader of men. And if you're not winning games, guess what? Then you don't have a whole lot there. It's all hat and no cattle, and this is the downside of it. We've really, frankly, I mean, Hugh won big at Mississippi with a lot of scandal, but he won, and he went to Liberty and won. This is the first time we've seen him in a situation where he's not winning, where he's not delivering on promise. And I say tough times reveals character, and that may be what we're seeing here.
Yeah, I want to say maybe last year was there his first or maybe just only second losing season in his coaching career, going even all the way back to like high school days where he won a bunch of state championships in Tennessee. So we haven't seen him lose very much. You're right, Pat. And maybe, you know, we are starting to see what happens when for the first time he starts to really lose. We talked about Auburn's offense a few times on the show and last year and off season. And I always come back to the question of they needed to get a transfer portal quarterback. We talked about that. Like, why didn't they get, you know, a transfer portal quarterback? Not that they didn't try. I think there was an effort to try to get someone, and it just didn't work out. But it is a bit head scratching that all these programs can go out and get quarterbacks, and they did not over the offseason. It was pretty clear last year they needed to, and so here we sit, and Bo Wallace's comments take me back to Varsity Blues, the movie. You know, it's the first thing I thought of is the quarterback, you know, sitting on the table and taking the shot in the knee. You know, and coach close that door. You know, come on, boys.
John Voight or something like that.
Yeah, John Voight. Yeah, classic John Voight. Yeah.
He, John Voight, perfect, like angry,
oh, so
overpowering,
yeah.
Power hungry, yeah. High school coach.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, look, yep. This is Hugh Freeze. His bit at Ole Miss where he just lied to all the players and all their parents to save a recruiting class and say that all the violations were on Houston Nutt, not him. And then he knew that wasn't true, just blatantly. That's all I need to know about Hugh Freeze. But, you know, he wins, but it hasn't worked at Auburn yet at all. And I don't know if in NIL era, like things like Bo Wallace, in the past, this would be devastating in recruiting. Right? I mean, you're going to use this against him in recruiting. Believe me, everybody else is loving the Bo Wallace comments because they can sit there and send it to the kids and they can watch the TikTok and go, you want to play for this guy? You want to play for us? Auburn is a wonderful place to go to school and play football, and they've got money. So maybe it doesn't matter in the future of getting a quarterback. But I found these comments just be interesting because the one thing that Hugh Freeze desperately needs is quarterbacks, both a really good high school one that they're trying to flip from Notre Dame or Mississippi, and then somebody really good in the portal. And you've literally got his probably his most successful former quarterback literally saying, my son ain't playing there. This guy's the worst. Will it matter or not nowadays? I don't know. You show up at Auburn, you look around campus, you're like, this is awesome. And, oh, we're going to pay you this amount of money. And you're like, I'll do it. Or do you go, well, this dude up at Holmes Community College is saying, don't do it. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a JUCO coach.
I don't know. It's one of those things, like if it is your kid that wants to play quarterback and you're looking around, you certainly keep it in the back of your mind, but you probably also, if your kid really likes Auburn and they're offering him $1 million or whatever the price tag may be, you go and you sit there and you say, go ahead, Hugh, tell me what I want to hear. And boy, he'll be good at that. He'll tell you what you want to hear. And you get in there, and if you start throwing interceptions, it might be a different story. But I would bet it doesn't end up hurting him.
Probably not in this day and age. All right, let's try to get through a few more. Illinois, 4-0. They're going to play Ohio State this week. Just quickly, Pat, big-time victory for the Illini. Every reason for them to lose. Nebraska cannot win a close game. I think we all know that. Weirdest trend. We're talking through multiple coaches and roster turnovers. Like, is there something? Do they need to import some Ames water to Lincoln? What is going on? I don't know. Like, how do you keep losing every close game? But they lost it, and it was a great win by Illinois. And they're 4-0. And we've talked on this podcast for years since Brett Bielema got there. Like, he's going to build something, and I certainly don't expect him to beat Ohio State, but. 4-0 is 4-0. First time since 2011, I think, for the school. What do you think of this Illini team? 4 touchdowns, you know, the quarterback, Luke Altmaier, 4 touchdowns. Just a great win.
Yeah, love it. Big Brett. Big Brett getting it done there. Proven coach who always wins, and even in tough places. So I thought we all thought coming into the game that this was going to be close, the spread was a little too big, and that this would be a dangerous situation for Dylan Raiola, as good as he is, against a guy that's going to have a pretty crafty defense and kind of probably shrink the game with the running game. All those things happened, and Illinois made more plays, including throwing a touchdown to a 335-pound lineman who was in the game as a tackle eligible. That was beautiful. So, you know, there was a couple years, 2022, when Illinois, they ended up only 8-5, but they were a really good team. And I remember they had Michigan pretty much all but beaten in Ann Arbor, and Michigan pulled it out to go win, and on its way to winning the Big Ten and going to the playoff. I mean, that's, Illinois was legit. This team may not have quite that level, especially defensively, but they're good, and they're a problem for the rest of the Big Ten, and they play a lot of the key teams, so they'll have something to say about how this ends up. And Nebraska, it is unbelievable. Unbelievable. Last year, 5 losses in one-score games, 0-5, including the last 4 games of the year. And then how do we start 2024? First close game, they lose it. And in one of those where, geez, they probably should have won and found ways not to. It's astounding. As you said, I don't know whether they need an exorcism there at Memorial Stadium or what, but they just have a knack, no matter who the coach is, who the quarterback is, of making the wrong play at just the wrong time. Like their last 8 plays of the game, it was like miss an open wide receiver for a touchdown, miss the field goal, Take a knee to end regulation. Start overtime with a penalty. Sack, sack, sack. And then Hail Mary incomplete. I mean, it was just a total disaster.
You know, Raiola, yeah, when he missed that, oh, that open, wide open receiver for a touchdown that basically put the game away. You know, he's a true freshman, obviously, playing his, really his first, like, big game. You know, they're unopposed on a Friday night. It's packed there, and that one I'm sure is going to sting. Matt Rhule is probably going to have to do a lot of, coaching there or therapy, whatever, with a true freshman to miss something like that. And then they miss the field goal. It is like some kind of curse. You know, that's what it feels like for Nebraska. I think they haven't beaten a top 25 team in like 10 years or something. Is that seems a lot too long, maybe 6 years, or it's a certain amount of games, like 25 or 30 straight losses.
Yeah. I think it goes back teams. To Mike Riley. I think,
that's unbelievable. Yeah. It's just, it's hard to believe. But Illinois, you know, I've been really impressed, but we kind of knew going into the season that Illinois' defense was going to be pretty solid. They had some studs there. But Luke Altmaier, at one point I looked up and I think he had missed like two throws, in the third quarter, and he was just firing, man. It was impressive. And they're certainly they'll be tested this week, right? They go to Penn State, but we've seen them now survive in games that they were down to Nebraska. They were down against Kansas as well, and came back. So resilient bunch.
Are they at Penn State? I thought I said Ohio yes, State.
Penn State.
I'm not really very good at this, as you guys know. I'll tell you what they're good at. 16-16 in the red zone.
Wow.
That'll win you some games.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Pretty good.
Buy stock in Clemson.
No, boy.
101 first half points the last 2 weeks. That'll win you some games. Mm-hmm. I mean, look, they looked good since Georgia, but they didn't play anybody. I don't know how good North Carolina State is now either, but they just steamrolled them, woodshedded. NC State. Did we write off Clemson too early?
Well, I mean, instead of buying stock in Clemson, how about we fire everyone on Tobacco Road? I mean, good God.
That's what we
North
need
Carolina,
around
here. North Carolina and North Carolina State at the same time, both noon kickoff games, were absolute disasters. I mean, it was incredible. It's 28-0 Clemson on NC State in the first quarter. It's 45-7 at halftime. And then North Carolina is absolutely getting trucked by James Madison. James Madison looked like Nebraska 1983. Just absolutely steamrolling through North Carolina.
46 what? Points in the first half.
Yes. I mean, what in the absolute hell was that? Just incredible. I mean, so, yeah, all right, yes. Credit to Clemson. Little old Clemson. Coming back, extremely explosive all of a sudden after scoring three against Georgia. But mostly I came away saying Tobacco Road is on fire and not in a good way.
Yeah, basketball season, Pat, is not too long away. So there you go. A couple weeks, they start practice, I think.
James Madison, 53 first half points, 611 total yards, caused three fumbles and two interceptions, including a pick six, and then they spent the rest of the game reading the Federalist Papers. I mean, this is just...
You guys saw what Mac Brown said after the game, huh? You know, apparently talking to his team. 24/7 Sports reported that he suggested that he would step away. Later on, he kind of clarified things through the school and himself, I think, but that he would be back at work today. Clearly, Mac Brown's future there seems to be coming to an end.
Sally said, I got to get back out there and coach the boys. Got to get back in there. Sally said, I don't know. That's not good. Finally, great win by Utah. Cam Rising does not play. And they go to Oklahoma State and hold off the Cowboys 22-19, coupled with the K-State loss. They really puts them in the driver's seat in the Big 12 early. Pat, you watched some of this Utah game?
I did. It was like, of all the Kyle Whittingham games, this was one of the Kyle Whittinghamest. They take your starting quarterback out, go on the road, play an undefeated team. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. We're going to do what we do. We're going to pound you with our defense, and we're going to run the ball. Micah Bernard was fantastic running, had 180-some yards, including one run where he just like went through three or four tacklers and then juked around another couple, ran for like 60-something. And Isaac Wilson, good young quarterback, Zach Wilson's younger brother, didn't make any mistakes or not enough mistakes to hurt them. And so that's what they needed. And that's, this was just so Kyle Whittingham. They're so solid, you know, they are so fundamentally sound and tough. And it's like, hey, we're just not going to break down. We're going to be ready to play with whoever we got. We'll see whether you're good enough. And Oklahoma State was not good enough. The score ended up close. It was not a close game. It was 22-3 midway through the fourth quarter. So Utah, they certainly are better with Cam Rising back, but given how many games he's missed, I think they're prepared to go forward with Isaac Wilson if need be.
It's incredible. Every time we think that, like I was listening to the last bit, a few minutes of game day on Saturday morning, and I think Herb Street was picking this game. Instead of Cam Rising plays, they win. If Cam Rising doesn't play, they don't win. And just no matter how much we doubt them, Utah continues to play incredible defense to stay in, if not win every game. And defense travels. I think Oklahoma State had 8 punts in the game, and like at one point had like 4 or 5 straight 3-and-outs in the game. It was just an incredible all around defensive effort from Whittingham's group, and maybe they get Cam back at some point. You would think against stiffer competition, they're going to need Cam back, especially when you start talking about the championship race and the playoff and all those things. If you look at their Big 12 schedule, as we kind of talked about earlier, I mean, the Big 12 is up for grabs for anybody. There's just a lot of, you know, middling type of teams. And I'm not sure they play a ranked team again until Iowa State, the second to last game of the season, is Iowa State right now ranked number 20. They do not play another ranked team. So you feel like they could probably get through that stretch without Cam. But in the playoff and stuff, hopefully they can get him back. They have a bye after Arizona next week. And so you'd think, you know, maybe they can rest him up, get him back.
Yeah, Big 12's learning what the Pac-12's long knew. Utah's going to be there in the end. All right, last one. We got to get to this Kansas State situation because I All right, so K-State, before the game, and we discussed at length the other day. You can go back and get the full details. But the Twitter account, St. Bill Snyder, got in on this ridiculous trend of guaranteeing victory by their favorite team. And if they don't, some calamitous thing would happen to them, including we've had eating dog out of a cup. We've had a guy saying he's going to get tasered in the where you don't want to get tasered. A TCU fan, a Florida State fan, all different things have happened. St. Bill Snyder says that he goes on and predicts that he will stuff a beefy five layer burrito up his whatever if K-State loses to BYU. Well, it's going along fine. Kansas State's leading 6-0, and then with 2:12 left in the first half, BYU kicks a field goal. With 1:17 left, they score a touchdown. With 31 seconds left, they score another touchdown. 13:05 left in the third, they score another touchdown. And then at 11:09, they do this ridiculous punt return that ends up being like a 90-yarder for another touchdown. It's 31-6. And heads up. And St. Bill Snyder says we're going to be fine. Then he says, I'm going to go smoke a cigarette. Then he says, I'm heading to Taco Bell. Then 8 more field goals wins us the game. Then I'm so cooked, bro. Then there is video of him opening a bag of Taco Bell with a burrito in his kitchen and putting it in the freezer. K-State loses to BYU. I'll shove a beefy five-layer burrito up my ass. Also funny, Taco Bell has the fan section.
The Live Moss fan
Live Moss section. Fans. There was a BYU student with a sign, and it's just classic BYU. He said, he had a burrito with him, or Taco Bell gave him the burrito. Who knows? It said, here's the burrito to stuff up your, he used the word bum because he didn't want to use the word ass. Love BYU. St. Bill Snyder and I, of course, these are the types of people I converse with. We were chatting. I was really a wellness check on him.
Yeah.
Said, are you okay mentally, physically, emotionally, or spiritually? He told me at 10:49 this morning, which is just 16 minutes ago, quote, we're going to make history, end quote.
Oh, no, no.
I said, I don't want to see. I saw the burrito go in the freezer. That's the only place I want to see the burrito. There's lots of other Cyclone Larry, the Iowa State fan, is off the hook because the Cyclones won, but other people were also found on Twitter saying they would eat the burrito. I'm just, it's just a lot for a Sunday morning, Pat. It
is. This is Dan's reporting work for the pod here in the last few episodes. Getting the Spangler kid that got screwed out of the car and now the five-layer burrito guy.
The whack jobs love me. I'm in tune with the whack jobs. Did I get the scoop on Mac Brown? No, hell no. Mac didn't call me back, but I can get this guy. St. Bill Snyder?
Hey, these are the stories people love. Yes, St. Bill Snyder has an obligation to do what he needs to do, but none of the rest of us need to see it.
So, Ross, of the high-profile bad bets, would you rather... Would you rather
go on
eat dog crap out of a Solo cup, get tasered in the nuts, or have the burrito incident occur? Who wore it worse? Who bet worse?
All right, I'm anything with the stomach and potentially vomit happening is out. So I can't do the dog food.
Okay.
Or dog.
Yeah,
dog.
Any dog
food. I can't do that.
Yeah.
Maybe would have picked dog food. Yeah. But so I can't do the dog.
Okay.
And I just can't. Okay. I wouldn't be able to do it. Mm-mm, not going to happen. The tasing situation could have long-term effects on the regions of the body that are vital.
It could also unexpectedly open up some new avenues. there's a 1% chance this spins positively.
Really?
I don't know.
Is that right?
There's somebody out there.
Pat's over there clutching his heart against the wall. I mean, I'm
just saying.
I mean, so I don't know. So I don't know that. I don't know that I would pick that one. I mean, I'm left with shoving a burrito up my ass. That's where we are here, Dan. Anyway, who said it had to be frozen? See, I don't agree with that. I thought that's a good, easy way out of this thing.
Because,
I mean, if it's frozen, then it really could cause serious damage, I would think. But if it's soft, we'll see. There you go.
That's the insight you get on the College Football Inquirer.
Good talk. Yeah, good talk, boys.
No, that's the only choice. I hate to say it, but out of those three choices.
Or just let the gun go off, right? Just.
Yeah, right.
It was a good life.
Yeah. Exactly.
All right, we'll be back.
Dan, suggesting a positive side effect from tasing your...
There's some weird stuff out there, Pat. There's some weird stuff. I don't know. Ooh. I don't know. I'm not looking this up. I can tell you that. But I'm just saying.
No, let's not.
It's a weird world. It's a weird world. All right. We'll be back. Small sample Heisman. And we're going to try to say something nice. All right. We like to give out the Heisman every week. Why wait to the end? So let's do some small sample Heismaning. Who has one? Anyone? Pat?
I got
Ross,
one.
Go for it.
I'm going to give it to just a unit, the SMU defense, which we haven't talked about, the Iron Skillet.
Oh, I know.
Which was an absolute disaster that included former SMU coach, current TCU coach, Sonny Dykes, getting ejected from the game in the third quarter after back-to-back unsportsmanlike penalties, jawing at the ref. At the officials, he walked off and waved goodbye because I think this is the last game in the series so far. Right now, as it is right now, but my small sample goes to the SMU defense specifically. They scored 14 points, recovered a fumble, returned it for a 51-yard touchdown, and they had a pick six too. They also, the special teams, returned a punt for a touchdown. It was just an absolute whipping. At one point, it was 17-0. Then it was 41-21 at halftime, SMU. This morning, I woke up. I saw Rhett Lashley, the SMU coach, had tweeted a picture of a skillet, an old-fashioned skillet with eggs that he was frying in it this morning for breakfast. So there you go.
Yeah, I'll get to – I got a little more skillet talk for you after this. But for small sample Heisman, I'm going Friday night to the Palouse and a wild game between San Jose State and Washington State. Two undefeated teams. Game ended at like 2 a.m., maybe later. I think it was like 2:15 a.m. I didn't stay up to see it. But John Mateer, the quarterback at Washington State, a lot of people thought they were doomed after they lost Cam Ward. Oh, my gosh. This guy gets a lot done. Makes some mistakes, but wow. Threw for 390 and four touchdowns. Ran for 111 and another touchdown. Just your average 501-yard, five-touchdown performance. And Washington State is undefeated with wins over Texas Tech and Washington. Cougs. John Mateer, small sample.
Small sample Heisman to Indiana quarterback Curtis Rourke. I know they're playing Charlotte at home, but whatever. IU is 4-0. Rourke was 16 of 20 passing, 258, two touchdowns. Really, the whole Indiana offense, 222 yards rushing. They scored six touchdowns in this game. There's the Hoosiers are one of the great stories of college football this year. And they got Maryland and Northwestern next. I mean, they could start 6-0, could be ranked. Curtis Rourke, transfer from Ohio, so far looks like one of the better transfer pickups going. And it's interesting that there's a lot of guys that I imagine got a lot more on the open market than this guy, but he can really play. And I am fascinated with what is happening at Indiana in that offense. And so I'm going to give my small sample Heisman to Curtis Rourke on behalf of the entire Hoosier team.
All right. Auburn might not be 1-2 if they had Curtis Rourke.
Yeah.
Boy, that's
a lot
sure.
of people could use Curtis Rourke, and he came out of Ohio and went to Indiana. So this is where that general manager position. This kid looks good. We'll see. Again, no one's saying you're going to win the national title. Stop with that.
They could do that against Ohio State.
I know. I know Ohio State and Georgia. Better. Yeah. We got a lot of teams here. A lot of people like the sport. Say something nice. We said all sorts of mean, weird. This has been it's been one. We're on one. It's a weird Sunday morning here.
A lot of burrito talk.
Pat, can you say something nice?
Absolutely. About the Iron Skillet rivalry. Long may it last. Unfortunately, it won't. They do play again next year. They play in Fort Worth. That's the last game scheduled. This is one of those, realignment. Look, congratulations. You just nuked a rivalry that started in, I believe, 1915. Metroplex, Fort Worth, and Dallas do not like each other. The lead up to this game, Eric Johnson, the mayor of Dallas, wearing a shirt to the city council meeting that says TCU sucks. That went over real well in Fort Worth. TCU social media taking shots at the game being on the CW. You're only in the ACC with the CW.
Whatever, man.
CW. Yeah, what did they put? It's on the CW, unfortunately, was the tweet.
Unfortunately, yeah.
What's wrong with CW? It's everywhere. I'm enjoying the CW getting into sports.
Yeah. It's look, it's good for the fans.
The next
it
channel.
Is, but
I hate this CW. Yeah. Gas station TV's next. Let's do it.
There you go. Yeah.
But then after the game, the ACC football social media channel fires back, said TCU fans probably glad it was just on the CW because they didn't get wide distribution of them getting their asses beat. But then the capper, yeah, Sonny Dykes, his last appearance at SMU, getting ejected. Basketball coaches get ejected all the time. Football coaches do not. This was a rare occurrence. And for him, this is classic one of those where, like, I cannot stand to be here to watch my team lose to my former school. I'm getting myself thrown out. And he was shaking his fists at the crowd on the way out. I mean, this is some good old-fashioned Texas hate. I love it. It was great, and I really hope we can find a way to have the Iron Skillet rivalry in our future.
Yeah, it was. I hope they will revive it, keep it alive. I want to say something nice about Northern Illinois, Toledo, and Memphis, who managed to beat power conference teams, one of them ranked in the top 15, and then crap themselves the next week. All of them. Toledo beat Mississippi State last week. Memphis won at Florida State last week. 2 weeks ago, Northern Illinois, which had a bye last week, of course, took down Notre Dame. They lost to Western Kentucky, Navy, and Buffalo this week. Not that they're completely out of the race for the G5's race for the CFP spot, but these they were in prime position, and now not so much. Don't control really their own destiny. So I think there's only four, maybe five G5 undefeated teams remaining. UNLV, Liberty. Who am I missing here?
Army and Navy.
Army and Navy.
And James Madison.
Right. James Madison, yeah, JMU. And then there's a sixth, of course, was Washington State, which can't get the AQ, but can get an at-large as a G5. So good job, guys. Way to pull off the big victories and then poop.
I got a quick question, Ross, if you know off the top of your head. Army and Navy are already compromised. Like, just let's say they're both 12-0 and they're playing each other. They're already compromised from a playoff standpoint. The game they play against each other is after Selection Sunday and would not count, which I think would severely impact them being selected. Is James Madison eligible yet? You know, they've got that probationary period. Is that over?
Yeah, it was over last year, I believe.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, I believe it ended last year. Now, Army and Navy one, that is fascinating. And the CFP met back in April and determined that they would pick the teams, you know, before that game. They wouldn't wait to the result of that game, and they would pick the G5 champion but after the AAC championship game. So they could meet in the AAC championship game, and the winner would, you know, potentially get the bid if they're the best, the highest ranked G5 champion. And then they would play again the next week in a game that, you know, outside of ceremonial is meaningless. And that was the exact thing, you know, Mike Oresco, before he retired, was hoping to avoid and argued with the CFP to no avail to wait for the G5 spot and keep it open for a week. And I think a lot of commissioners wanted them to move that game earlier in the season, maybe put it in the regular season somewhere. A week zero was talked about for a while.
Moving Army, Navy.
But that game does
communist.
Yeah, that game does too many good reviews, and it's contracted where that game has to be played, I believe, on the second Saturday in December per the CBS contract.
Listen, let me give the committee a little bit of PR advice. If this somehow comes down, you just say whoever wins that Army-Navy game is in. Because if you try to come up with, well, we have a rule, you will get buried by this country.
Right.
Like, give up. It's Army-Navy. Do not mess with this thing.
Don't say, well, we're going to take UNLV instead of waiting for,
They had game control against San Jose State that time. No, not. Just give up. Throw your hands up and be like, sorry, you're out. Take it up with Army or Navy. They got the guns. Not. All right. I'm going to say something nice about Boston College.
3-1 under Bill O'Brien. Banger of a start. Mm. Only losses at Missouri in a very good game. Michigan State played a whale of a game on Saturday night. They had this thing won. Late in the game, Thomas Castellanos hits Lewis Bond on a 42-yard touchdown. It's raining. It's rain-soaked. Michigan State kid falls down. BC wins 23-19. Program is humming. That's a great victory. They have ACC slate is not impossible for what's coming up on them. They don't play Clemson. I don't know where this could go. They got Western Kentucky at Virginia, at Virginia Tech. They play Louisville late October. Like, BC is on a run here. Could be really on a run. That said, to celebrate BC, you know, the big thing of these sing-along songs, mm-hmm. right? Third quarter, with light shows, sing-along.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They're singing Mr. Brightside at Boston College, the Killers, Mr. Brightside. Terrific song. It's also Michigan's song.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can't steal somebody else's song. Okay. This is like Georgia Tech starting to play Dixieland Delight. Like, you can't steal their. Did they think no one would notice? It's Michigan's song. It's not like, it's like, I don't know, whatever, some smaller program.
Yeah, it's not Ferris State. It's Michigan.
BC, get your own song. This is embarrassing. Your program's good now. You can't steal Michigan's song.
There's a lot of songs.
There's a lot of songs. Mr. Brightside's a good song, but it's Michigan's song. There's lots of good songs. Find a song. All the shipping up to Boston, play that.
Yeah.
Play something from Boston. You do not steal the reigning national champion song and think no one's going to notice. That's embarrassing, BC.
Yeah.
No one, maybe they did it in years past, but no one heard it. Well, we're hearing it now.
Yeah. They got to give up. You've been big footed here. You got to give Michigan the song and back away.
Well, I think Michigan probably came first, didn't they?
I would think so. I don't know how long Michigan's been doing it.
They've been doing it a while. I don't know how long either, yeah. But at least 5 years or so. I don't know.
Is that right?
You can't steal someone's third quarter song. There's got to be rules around here. I know we cheated everything in this sport. Where's John Duncan? Do an investigation on this, John. Stop looking into me and look into who's stealing whose song. I'm under investigation. BC should be under investigation for stealing a song.
Call a meeting at the Slippery Noodle to discuss it.
Good Lord. All right. That's our show. I don't know what the hell just happened, just like I didn't know what happened on Saturday. We kind of have a loose outline. That was not it. I know that.
No.
Poor Joe.
Never.
Poor Joe. Producer Joe. We'll be back Tuesday. Big week coming up. Oh, Georgia and Alabama are playing. Yes. Juicy, juicy, juicy. Thanks for sharing. Telling your friends about us. We'll talk to you later.